Now I would like to address the arguments that these schismatics make with regard to canonizations. They not only reject the infallibility of canonizations, but they actually hold that to consider them infallible is heretical and a denial of Vatican I. I'm going to refute that now. Their argument is that Vatican I proclaimed, quote, "The Holy Spirit was not promised to the successors of Peter that by his revelation they might disclose new doctrine, but that by his help they might guard sacredly the revelation transmitted through the apostles and the deposit of faith," end quote. So they argue Vatican I rules out any new doctrine, and a canonization is a new doctrine, they say, because divine revelation ended with the death of the last apostle. We all agree about that. And therefore, this saint who lived and died after the death of the last apostle, such as in the 15th or 16th, etc., centuries, to say that he's certainly in heaven is equivalent to proclaiming a new doctrine. And this argument is completely false, and I'm going to refute it, but I want to point out first that it comes from this wacky heretic named R.I. in the Southwest. He's the one who actually started making this argument to deny canonizations, and the reason he made it is because he doesn't allow any room for being ignorant in good faith on any aspect of Catholic teaching, and so his radical views on that area eventually led him to condemn all kinds of canonized saints as heretics. So he had to find a way to argue that canonizations are not infallible, and started spreading this erroneous, false, heretical argument. And these other schismatics picked up on it and adopted it. It's exactly like how Protestantism spreads, how one sect member creates his church, and then another Protestant will found his own church and adopt many of the aspects of the other Protestant's church, but give his own spin to it, sort of like how the Mennonites, okay, created their sect, and then the Amish created their own sect as a break-off of the Mennonites. That's exactly what's going on with these radical schismatics. Now, how to refute the argument. Vatican I is denouncing the idea that a pope could infallibly, or was given infallibility, to proclaim a new point of divine revelation. Okay? That does not mean, or prove, or show, that the Church's infallibility is limited to defining on matters of divine revelation. We agree, a canonization of a saint is not a truth of divine revelation because divine revelation ended with the death of the last apostle. But it is an infallible judgment of the Church because the Church's infallibility extends to its ongoing mission and other things outside of defining on points of divine revelation. It's not limited to that. For example, here are some matters which represent areas in which the Church makes infallible judgments, but are not, strictly speaking, truths of divine revelation, such as, for example, Pope Leo XIII's solemn declaration in the Bull Apostolici Curiae of 1896 that Anglican orders are invalid. He solemnly pronounced that the Anglican ordinations are not valid, okay? Well, the Anglican rite of ordination and episcopal consecration came into existence after the death of the last apostle. So this is not a truth of faith or morals handed down in divine revelation. Okay, it's not a dogmatic statement, but it is an infallible judgment, okay, related to faith. Another example would be the Council of Florence's solemn definition that the Filioque Creed or clause and the Son was lawfully added to the Nicene Constantinople Creed. That addition of the Filioque to the Creed, of course, occurred after the death of the last apostle. It's not part of divine revelation that closed with the death of the last apostle that the Filioque was lawfully added to the Catholic Creed. But the Pope is infallibly judging that it was lawfully added, and you can find the quote for that statement in the Council of Florence, the decree Letentur Celae, July 6, 1439, Denzinger 691, Quote, we define, in addition, that the explanation of the words filioque, for the sake of declaring the truth and also because of imminent necessity, has been lawfully and reasonably added to the creed. End quote. According to these schismatics, that is not infallible because it's not, strictly speaking, a matter of divine revelation. It could be wrong. It could have been sinful, in other words, to add that to the creed. Now, how to refute their main point, which these examples do, but to really drive the point home, we have to prove that the church's infallibility extends to areas outside of divine revelation. And the easiest way to prove that is by citing the Catholic teaching that the church is infallible in her universal disciplinary laws. In his encyclical of October 4, 1833, Quo Graviora, Pope Gregory XVI condemned the idea that the church's discipline is not infallible, and he's referring to the universal laws which are imposed upon all the members of the church. Pope Pius XII said the same thing in Mystici Corporis, where he says that the church is without blemish in her sacred laws imposed upon all. And Pope Gregory XVI taught the same thing in Quo Graviora, while when he says in number 5, quote, they contend that the exterior form of the church can be changed. When they do this, do they not subject to change even those items of discipline which have their basis in divine law and which are linked with the doctrine of faith in a close bond? Does not the law of the believer thus produce the law of the doer? Moreover, do they not try to make the church human by taking away from the infallible and divine authority by which divine will it is governed? And does it not produce the same effect to think that the present discipline of the church rests on failures, obscurities, and other inconveniences of this kind, and to feign that this discipline contains many things which are not only useless, but which are against the safety of the Catholic religion? End quote. So he says that the governing of the authority of the church is infallible. That proves that the church's infallibility extends to areas outside of strictly defining on matters of faith or morals that were revealed in divine revelation. In the very same encyclical, and in fact in that same paragraph, he makes reference to Pope Pius VI's dogmatic decree, Auctorum Fidei, and the condemned error in number 78 of that constitution. In that error, people were asserting that the church's discipline could lead to superstition and other things, and it was condemned. Now, this applies to the church's universal laws, and something such as the 1917 Code of Canon Law, which only bound the Latin church, not the universal church, would not be a universally binding law. Now, this teaching on the infallibility of the church's universal law was reiterated by Pope St. Pius X in his encyclical Edete Sepe, May 26, 1910, number 8, quote, in fact, only a miracle of that divine power could preserve the church, the mystical body of Christ, from blemish in the holiness of her doctrine, law, and end, in the midst of the flood of corruption and lapses of her members, end quote. So again, this is an example of the teaching of the ordinary and universal magisterium. And it's actually rooted in the dogmatic teaching of Auctorum Fidei of Pius VI, which Pius X also, and Gregory XVI both call dogmatic. They both call Auctorum Fidei of Pius VI dogmatic. And so this is clearly the teaching of the magisterium, that the church's law is infallible. The church's governing authority is infallible, thus proving that the church's infallibility is not limited, as these heretics contend, to defining on matters of faith or morals that are in divine revelation. Another example of something that would not be infallible, according to them, is the condemnations of heretics. Because if canonizations are not infallible, because the saint lived and died after the death of the last apostle, then neither would all the church's condemnations of heretics at ecumenical councils, because those heretics lived and died after the death of the last apostle. So when the Council of Constance, for example, solemnly declared and defined that John Huss was a notorious heretic, and the same about Wycliffe, and declared that he died in his heresy, that was simply a fallible judgment and proclamation, according to them. But the truth is that the authority that was given to St. Peter, the keys of the church, has a wide-ranging application, and it includes the ability to make judgments which bind the universal church on matters which are related to faith, even if they are not, strictly speaking, dogmas of divine revelation, because it concerns a matter that sprung up after the death of the last apostle. And we see a reference to this authority of a true pope, which is inherent in the keys, in numerous solemn teachings of the church. For instance, in Vatican Council I, and in fact in the very same chapter that these heretics misunderstand, Session 4, Chapter 4, this is found a little bit above that in Denzinger 1835, it says, quote, "The chief or head of the apostles, Blessed Peter, of whom the Roman pontiff is the successor, and just as it is bound above others to defend the truth of faith, so too, if any questions arise about faith, they should be defined by its judgment," meaning the Holy See. So the Holy See has the infallibility of its judgment on questions of faith which arise, and those aren't always defining matters that are strictly issues of divine revelation, but related to it, such as Pope Leo XIII's declaration that Anglican orders are invalid. That's something that arose after the death of the last apostle, and it concerns a rite of ordination that came into existence after the death of the last apostle, but it's an infallible judgment by the Pope because it's connected with faith and it's a binding decision which must be accepted by the universal church, and it also is connected with the dogmatic teaching on what is necessary to achieve the priesthood or to become a bishop. Another point worthy of mention, although the points that I've made already are the most definitive, is that the theologians are very clear that canonizations are infallible, and I just want to give a few quotes on this point, not that theologians' statements in themselves would prove the point, but it just, I think, adds something important. Sylvester Hunt, Outlines of Dogmatic Theology, 1895, says, quote, "No writer of repute doubts that this last decree of canonization is an exercise of the infallible authority of the Church. For were it mistaken, the whole Church would be led into offering superstitious worship." End quote. And so it's ironic that these heretics act as if they're concerned about heresy when their position would open up the door for the church to be honoring as its heroes, heretics, and men who are among the damned and the devils in hell. St. Robert Bellarmine expresses the same sentiment. He says, quote, "We hold that the church does not err in the canonization of saints. Proofs for this are not difficult to find." End quote. And on our website, we've quoted St. Alphonsus and others on this matter. St. Alphonsus says that to hold that the church could be in error on a canonization is heresy or next door to heresy. We also quote Pope Benedict XIV, who says that it's gravely insulting to the church and essentially schismatic. He doesn't call it directly heretical because it's not a matter of a dogma of divine revelation, but it's an infallible judgment of the church which is connected with divine revelation. And so that's why some of them say next door to heresy rather than directly heretical. But in essence it is, because it leads to the heretical conclusion that the church can officially teach error. And it is a dogma of divine revelation that the church is the pillar and foundation of the truth, 1 Timothy 3:15. So I think that wraps up the issue of canonizations. There are other points that could be covered, but I want to quickly refute some recent lies and then close with these shocking quotes from this heretic R.I. and how his demonic spirit and doctrines was the source for this kind of schismatic thought and a lot of these attacks against us, and I wanted to sort of draw that together. This guy Dave L. recently lied about us again, saying that we do not believe that the teachings of the Ordinary and Universal Magisterium are dogmas. That's a complete lie. We've never said that. We hold that if something is, in fact, a teaching of the Ordinary and Universal Magisterium, it must be believed with divine and Catholic faith. It is a dogma. We've never said otherwise. So that's just a lie, and they lie and misrepresent people's position quite often. Another lie he asserted is that we believe that popes can become public heretics in their fallible capacities. No, wrong, we do not believe that. We believe and correctly understand that popes can make errors in their fallible capacity on matters which touch upon dogmatic issues without being heretics. Big difference. One final objection I want to refute before I move to the quotes from R.I. concerns Pope Pius XII and the schismatics charge that we contradict ourselves because we point out that certain individuals can become heretics for holding things that are contrary to the natural law. And we also hold that it's a sin against the natural law to practice natural family planning, that people know in their hearts that they're thwarting the will of God. But we say that Pope Pius XII, who erroneously taught NFP, which is a sin against the natural law, was not a heretic. And they say this is a direct contradiction. No, it isn't. And I will explain why and refute again their misunderstanding and misconception. Anyone who denies a Catholic dogma becomes a heretic. The only way that someone who has not seen a Catholic dogma and is therefore not obstinate against it can become a heretic prior to demonstrating such obstinacy is if he adopts an opinion which conflicts directly with an essential truth of faith or morals in the Trinity and the Incarnation, or is a heresy against the natural law which translates into a direct rejection of the truth about God. For example, I mentioned earlier the example of someone who would adopt the idea of justification by faith alone, that as long as they believe, they can do whatever, and they will be rewarded. That is heresy, even if they haven't seen that heresy directly condemned, because everyone must know that God is a rewarder and a punisher. Okay, he knows in his heart that he is. And so to imbibe that theology would be heresy because it translates into a direct rejection of the truth about God. In the case of natural family planning, it has not been positively condemned by the church. In other words, there's not a decree which positively says that if anyone says that natural family planning is an acceptable practice, let him be anathema. Or if anyone says that you can use certain periods and avoid others to avoid the conception of children, let him be anathema. We can prove that it's false by the positive information and positive Catholic teachings on the primary purpose of the Marriage Act. And so while the individuals who are practicing NFP know in their hearts that they're thwarting the will of God, the false teaching of NFP by Pius XII wouldn't necessarily translate into a direct rejection of the essential truths that one must know about God himself. So there's no contradiction in our points there at all. Pius XII was definitely wrong in his teaching on NFP. We can prove that by the positive evidence, but it is not sufficient to absolutely show that he was a notorious non-Catholic and heretic. He was simply wrong. And the case that his statement proves that he is a non-Catholic heretic would be much stronger if there were a positive statement directly condemning natural family planning rather than simply the evidence which shows that it's condemned when you combine it together about the primary purpose of the Marriage Act. That being said, Pius XII was, in our view, a terrible pope, a bridge to the great apostasy, and very close to being a heretic, but we simply do not believe that there is enough evidence at all to say that he was definitely a heretical anti-pope.